This podcast has been rated unacceptable for all ages. It may contain explicit language, senseless and mitigated rambling, and incoherent thought processes. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey there, this is Just Generic, and this is another generic podcast. Number 6, brought to you by BelowTopSecret.com. Well, hello. This is Just Generic. In case you missed the nifty intro, it's been about 3 weeks since my last podcast. I almost feel like I'm doing like a confessional, you know. Forgive me, ATS, for I have sinned. It's been 3 weeks since my last podcast. bow down to the ATS gods. You know, on that note, I've come to the conclusion that I think I might be an ATS junkie. And I really think it might be a good idea if we set up like a support group. I think that's been mentioned before, you know, like an ATS Anonymous. You know, we can have like weekly meetings, monthly meetings. Everybody gets together, we eat little finger sandwiches and drink apple juice and bond. You know, share our ATS junkie stories. And, you know, I think it could fly. I think if we just apply a little more attention to it, I really think it could be something great. Anyway, I didn't really have much of a topic. Given the last podcast, you know, where I sort of let you know that I flipped out on my ex, and well, it was amusing for anybody but him. Poor guy. You know, I felt so guilty because he didn't stand a chance. He really did not stand a chance. He had no idea what the hell was going on. You know, one minute he's asking me a question, the next minute I'm just spazzing. I'm losing my fucking mind all over the place. And, you know, he just didn't stand a chance. He was just so unprepared and he's so ill-equipped to deal with this kind of thing. And I could hear him sputtering on the end of the line, you know, like just trying to get a word in. and like I said before, it's a really good thing that he didn't get a chance to say anything, because that probably just would have made it all that much more worse. Anyway, he let me stew for a couple of weeks before actually calling me back. I'd left a couple messages for him because I wasn't able to get a hold of him. And, you know, basically just saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong, yada yada yada, call me back. And he's going to keep them forever and ever, he says. just for posterity's sake. Yeah, I've apologized to people before, okay? Like, it's not something that I never, ever, ever do. I just try to not get myself into situations where I end up having to apologize. That's all. But, you know, something happens and shit happens. I do apologize for it, if I need to. And I needed to, so I did. And we did get it straightened out. And he's not a bad guy. He's, you know, when I talk about him to people, they get really angry because of the situation. You know, gone for 15 years, didn't talk to his kid, didn't pay child support. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that a person could focus on. You know, the negative. But we have a great kid. And there was something about him that attracted me, and enough so that I married the guy. So how bad can he really be, you know? And I try to keep it in perspective. And I do like him. About 80% of our marriage was actually fun, and it was just that 20% that we couldn't work out, and just could not work through it. And like I said, shit happens. You move on. And I try not to hold anything against him, because nobody's perfect, and God knows I'm not. So, you know, who the hell am I to lay that kind of judgment on somebody? And what happened with that phone call was just, you know, I just as snapped. And I went off on a little generic tangent, and he happened to receive the brunt of it. So anyway, that's all taken care of. So I figured in this podcast, just to sort of, you know, let you know a little bit about me without actually telling you anything about me. because I don't want to get into it, okay? I like my little bit of anonymity. You know, my name reflects that. Generic. I mean, just generic. Nothing special, nothing amazing. I'm just kind of here. And anyway, so I figured I would tell you this story. Gives you a little bit of insight into how my mind works. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, I like the way my mind works. I'm quite happy with it. It's not always, you know, on the money, but it does pretty well. And I find a lot of things funny that most other people wouldn't. And this story will probably demonstrate that quite clearly. Back in the 1980s, late 1980s, you know, Culture Club was all the rage. I was going to SAIT, Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, and I was taking, you know, some real nerdy programs, business administration and a couple of accounting programs, and my ex-husband happened to be taking a refresher culinary course, just a short little refresher, and, you know, his initials are JR, by the way, just so, you know, we can, I don't have to call him my ex-husband all the time. So anyway, JR was going to SAIT at the same time, and we would see each other in the hallways, didn't know each other, we never really talked, every now and then, you know, smile, nod, whatever, and I never gave him much thought. You know, you see a lot of people every day, and some of them stick in your mind, and some of them don't, and the only real thought I gave to this guy when I first saw him was, what an asshole. This you know, Guido Italian asshole with this arrogant grin and you know, strutting through the hallways thinking he was God's gift to women, and that was pretty much as far as I thought about him. I didn't really give him any thought other than that, just a big Guido asshole. And so we did have some mutual friends, and you know, just before the course ended, my course, I got this phone call from this guy. And all he said when I picked up the phone was, "Hey." And I said, "Hello? Who's this?" And he said, "You don't recognize my voice?" And I was like, "No, should I? I have no idea who you are." And he sort of told me, "Well, I've seen you at SAIT." And I was like, "Okay, well, I've seen a lot of people at SAIT. Can you, like, be more specific?" And by this point, I'm getting a little irritated because he's saying these really short sentences and then leaving a big pause. Like, I'm just supposed to instantly know who this guy is, because, you know, like, he's God's gift to women, right? And he's an arrogant jerk. So I finally asked him, I'm like, "Okay, well, you know, like, what's your name?" And he said, "You know, I'm JR." And I had no idea who the hell JR was. Not a clue. So I said, "Well, you know, like, what do you look like?" So he sort of told me what he looked like. And then it clicked in as to who this arrogant bastard was, and so I was like, "Okay, well, yeah, okay, I remember who you are. What do you want?" And of course, I'm irritated by this time, because, you know, it's been like a 5-minute conversation, and he really hasn't said much. He's just come across like a real prick, and so he says, "Well, you know, just called to see if you want to go out." And I said no. I said not particularly. And you know, I'll probably see you around. And that was the end of the conversation. A couple weeks later, you know, I had seen him around the hallways, and we hadn't really talked. A couple of weeks later, I got another phone call from him, and this time, you know, he said, "Hey, this is JR," and asked me what I was doing. You know, typical chit chat, small talk, and then threw out there again, you know, "Do you want to go out sometime?" And I said, "Well, no, not really." You know, I told him I was seeing somebody else. I wasn't, but you know, I told him I was, just to sort of get him off my back. And so that was the end of that conversation. I saw him again at school, in the hallways, and now he was feeling much more brave, and he would stop me in the hallways and strike up a conversation. Usually about, you know, school-related things, safe topics. And, you know, he still seemed like an arrogant prick, but, you know, maybe just a little less arrogant than he had before. You know, he was sort of, you know, getting a personality. And so anyway, we were like, you know, getting friendly, I suppose. And he called me again and asked me out, and this time I said yes. You know, he sort of wore down my resistance a little bit, I guess. And so I said yes. We set the time, we set the place, all that stuff. And he shows up at the house, picks me up, and as we're walking down the path to his car, I notice, first off, it was kind of obvious, there was a funny-looking girl sitting in the front seat. And this struck me as kind of strange for a couple of reasons, because, you know, he hadn't mentioned anybody else going on the date. As far as I understood, it was just going to be he and I. He called and asked me out, right? The second thing that I thought was, you know, like, she's sitting in my spot. I mean, I get shotgun, right? Because I'm the one he asked out. Weird little thought processes there. Anyway, so I'm sort of thinking this, and I turned to him and I just quietly said, you know, "Who the hell is that?" And he turned with this smile, and it was so arrogant. This smile, it just oozed arrogance, and he said very matter-of-factly, "Well, that's my girlfriend." And he continued walking to the car. I sort of stopped. I was just a couple feet from the car. And I'm looking at this funny-looking girl in the front seat. And I'm thinking, okay, this is just wrong. You know, so she smiles and says hello. And I smiled, sort of, and went, uh-huh. And then I bent down and I looked in the back seat. And there's a guy, a funny-looking guy, sitting in the fucking back seat. And by this time, I'm sort of cluing in as to what the hell's going on here, and I realize that I have been hopelessly tricked. And, you know, at that point, any normal woman would have probably turned around, walked back into the house, slammed the door, and that would have been it. You know, maybe told him that he was a real prick, and then turned around and walked back into the house. But I didn't. And for the life of me, I really don't know why. I stood back up after bending over and you know, peering at this funny looking guy in the back seat of the car. And I look across the roof of the car at JR. And he's still standing there with this big, arrogant, Italian grin on his face. And just smug, absolutely smug. And I didn't say anything. Instead, I just sort of mouthed the words, "You will pay." And proceeded to get into the back seat of the car. And you know, he got in and we drove to the bar, and pay he did. Oh my God, that man paid, because not only was he paying for his funny-looking girlfriend's drinks, he was also paying for my drinks. And you know, my family comes from, it's a long, long line of professional hardcore drinkers. And if there's anything that my family can do, is drink. And we are good at it. And I drank like a fish. And that evening, back in the 1980s, cost that man about $350. And it was thoroughly enjoyable. I danced a lot by myself, actually, because there was no way I was going to be dancing with the guy who was actually my blind date. The guy that I was tricked into going out with, who, incidentally, had two first names. You know, you meet these people that have generic last names. This guy had a first name as a last name, and his actual first name was just as generic as his last name, and I couldn't get them straight. And all night long, I kept calling him Bill Bob Bob Bill, and because I couldn't remember which was his fucking first name. And of course, it didn't help that I was really kind of drunk. And I wasn't really paying all that much attention to him, to be honest. He was the kind of guy that could only get a girl if the girl was actually either drugged or tricked into going out with him. He was just that kind of guy. And you know, they say that there's somebody for everybody, and that's just not true. That's just not true, because I've asked my ex, I've asked JR a couple of times, you know, hey, whatever happened to Bob Bill Bill Bob? And he now lives in Connecticut alone, and which is not surprising, because the whole night, I mean, the guy was just so slimy. I don't know how to describe it. He had so much Brill Cream in his hair, and it was so slicked back, and it was so stiff. And he had a mullet. I mean, he had a fucking mullet. And he reminded me of, you know, like Devo. You know, they used to wear those plastic hair, you know, costumes with the plastic hair. And that's what he reminded me of. And he was pigeon-toed. Like, really seriously pigeon-toed. And to the point where I was, you know, it was comical. I kept expecting him to trip. I would have liked it if he had tripped, actually, not to be mean. And he was knock-kneed. And he had this thing on his chin, this big scabby thing. And I remember asking him, you know, before I got too drunk, what is that thing on your chin? Like, is that just like a renegade zit? Or, like, what the hell is that? And he explained that it was an abscess, because he had an infected tooth that was actually draining out his chin. I was just like, I was fucking horrified. And, you know, I think that alone cost JR about $100 worth of liquor. The hair was like another 50, and the pigeon toad, well, that was kind of comical, so I didn't really charge for that. I was out on the dance floor at one point, dancing by myself, and this Bill Bob Bob Bill joined me on the dance floor and started doing like these, you know, disco actions and pointing at me and mouthing the words to the song. I was just like, oh my fucking god, I am not drunk enough. Not nearly drunk enough. Anyway, so we finished off the night. And, you know, JR, he's arrogant, and he may not be all that smart, but he obviously felt that it was safer and in everybody's best interest to drop off Bill Bob Bob Bill first, before I hurt somebody. So we dropped off this funny looking guy at home first, and then we dropped off his funny looking girlfriend because she had to work the next day. And then it was just him and I in the car for the remainder of the drive as we were on the way back to my house. And I didn't want to say anything because I figured, you know, anything that I say is going to come out really, really, really nasty. And I just want to get a ride home. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I didn't want to say anything that might prompt him to stop the car open the door and push me out. So, because, you know, I, not that I thought he really would, but, you know, sort of in my drunken stupor. So he dropped me off at home, and that was pretty much it. I didn't hear from him again. You know, I thought it was really funny, to be perfectly honest. I genuinely thought it was funny. But I never talked to him again after that, and it was about 3 months that went by. And I got a phone call from him again, asking me if I wanted to go out. And, you know, of course, after I made sure there would be no other people going on this date, you know, and I still wasn't completely sure, so I told him I would actually meet him at the restaurant. And just to be absolutely sure, you know, I could sort of peek in and see who was there and deke out if I had to. And we really had a good time. You know, what an icebreaker, right? And I tell my daughter this story because she's heard all the funny stories about her dad and you know, some of the nice things about him over the years, because, you know, I really wanted her to have that. She didn't have her dad, so she might as well have some of the nice things that I remembered about him, and as opposed to just a whole bunch of negativity, which nobody needs. And so she's grown up with this story, and it really is one of my favorites, because I think it clearly demonstrates that I'm insane, number one. But that, you know, I have a good sense of humor, and things that might not appear to be amusing really genuinely are, if you break them down and spend a little bit more time thinking about them. Nothing is really a completely negative. There's always something amusing or positive to be gleaned from things, and this is kind of one of those things. And it was really funny, just the arrogance. The sheer arrogance of this guy to call me up, ask me out on a date, and then show up with his girlfriend and his best friend in the back seat as my blind date. You know, some people meet in a crowded room and they spot each other and their eyes meet and lock, and the rest of the world ceases to exist, and there are fireworks and church bells going off, and, you know, elevator music plays in the background. And not me. No, not me. I mean, I meet a guy, you know, like I did my ex-husband, JR, or I meet a guy like I did, you know, just recently, have the flu and run the man down trying to get to the bathroom. And I find these things just deliciously amusing, and I don't know. I couldn't imagine being the kind of person that would get really upset about things like that, because life is goddamn funny, so much so that I spend a lot of time just laughing. And I think that's a good thing, you know, because God knows enough things have happened that would have been enough to push an ordinary person over the edge. And I just keep hanging in there and finding positive things to keep myself going. And I think that's what it's about, you know. And hopefully anyone listening to this podcast has found this story amusing, and hopefully it gives you a little insight into the generic mind. And, you know, it's not really talking about myself, but it's sort of talking about myself in a roundabout way, I guess, which is, you know, make fun of myself and point out potential flaw or a potential good thing. However you want to look at it, whether the glass is full or whether the glass is empty, half full, half empty, you know. Well, that was a Bushism, wasn't it? On that note, we are going to end this podcast. This has been Just Generic, and this has been the Generic Podcast.